I want to talk with you today about divine mysteries. This is a good day to talk about divine mysteries because it's Easter and much of the world holds as central the divine mystery that Easter celebrates. But Christianity is one tradition among others that have as a central core divine mysteries. And when we think about this, our purpose needs to not just honor something that's out there in history, wherever out there might be in the past, but to honor divine mysteries as they relate to our individual life. There are so many places where mystery plays a part if we notice it. So many. If our attention is just focused on the physical level of what's going on around us, we tend to take things for granted. But if our attention is focused on the soul aspect of who we are, or who anybody is, then we're constantly in the presence of mystery. Because every living thing has a soul. Every living thing has a soul. Human beings have souls with which they incarnate and a consciousness that is more developed than other species in many respects. But every living thing has a soul, and therefore every living thing has some consciousness, and every living thing has energy, and every living thing can communicate with us if we're open to it. Because in the world of mystery, there are no its. There's just life. There are no its. We see things as it, like a rock, or a boulder, or a hill, or the ground underneath our feet. We see it as it because we're used to seeing with physical eyes. But there's no such thing as an it. And so when we encounter mystery, new experience comes to us, telling us that life is more alive than we are presently aware. One of the things that crossed my path years ago, and some of you may already have familiarity with this, was the world of quantum physics. Dear to my heart is the world of quantum physics, because the mystery that is there is both real, in particular in relation to subatomic particles, but it's also a metaphor for the rest of life. And it remains there. It remains there as a part of theoretical physics that scientists just look at and say, we don't know what's going on. So some of the things that I used to recount to you, and some of you may have done more reading about this than I have. The idea that, just this is a basic idea, that something can be a wave and a particle at the same time is a fundamental principle. But what does that mean? It means that we don't know what anything is, because it's a this if we look at it one way and it's a that if we look at it another way. That's what quantum physics brought to our engagement with reality. That something we thought was solid was only solid part of the time and the rest of the time it wasn't. And that was one thing, that something can be energy and matter alternately, depending on how you look at it. Another thing that crossed my awareness was the communication of particles with each other. That if you take an electrically charged particle, and they have so many different names, which I'm not conversant with. Muon is one of my favorite, though, and I don't even know what a muon is, but it's one of my favorite muons. Anyway, if you take one of these very tiny particles and you do something to it, you operate on it in some way, I don't know, by bringing other particles in relation to it, then another particle that's somewhere else that has nothing to do with what you're doing will be similarly affected. It's got a name. It's long-distance communication between particles that resonate to the same frequency. So we got one muon here and one muon there, and they talk to each other. And there's no way of saying how that reality works except on the invisible energetic network, invisible, that which is a particle is also an energy, so the energy communicates to the other muon particle. That was another part of quantum physics that attracts us to divine mystery. And a third part has to do with particles appearing and disappearing. And again, some of you who may have read more may know more about this, but as quantum physicists became more knowledgeable and more capable of making refined observations, then it became clear that there were particles that appeared and disappeared, and into what? One doesn't know. The reason that in recent years scientists were looking for what became called the God particle was because there was a search for an explanation about where particles came from, because it wasn't explainable how something could be in existence in one moment and gone the next. So again, I'm saying to you that this is both a reality and a metaphor, that things change form. They change into form and they change out of form. Matter becomes energy, energy becomes matter. Mostly, we're understanding how matter becomes energy, because if you take a piece of wood and you light a fire under it, it becomes heat and it becomes flame and so on. So we understand mostly that things can give off heat and they can give off energy. Physics and science has absorbed that into our mainstream consciousness. But we don't understand yet how energy becomes matter. And energy can become matter. For example, a physical body can become lifeless, and then life can return back into it. Well, we understand death. The energy of what we call life force leaves the physical body, and then the body stops, the heart stops pumping, and the breath stops moving, and the brain stops working. So we understand the dynamic principle of how death occurs. But we think of death as finite. We think of death, okay, then you left, except for the times when people return. But then we think of it as not entirely completed death, the near-death experiences that people report. But we don't understand that the matter-energy equation goes both ways. Matter becomes energy, energy becomes matter. So that when it comes time for us to learn this, we'll understand that there is a principle of incarnation, how we got here into our physical bodies, that doesn't correspond to just the egg and the sperm getting together. That's the physical basis of incarnation, of how an egg gets fertilized and an embryo gets formed and so on. But that's not the cause of how that happens. The cause is the consciousness producing energy, which descends along dimensional levels of frequency, which then becomes progressively more solid, which then enters the DNA of the cell. These are vibrational mysteries that just have to do with how we get born. When we're only attuned to a small section of that, which is the way the physical portion relates of sperm and egg. But the actual sequence is consciousness decides to incarnate, puts down filaments of energy, descending in layers of density of vibration that is getting heavier, and at some point that energy becomes physical matter into the genes. How about that? That wasn't a real question. So, what we know about the physical body and its relationship to the universe is very small. And what we know about all physical bodies, the life of the physical world, is very small. Today, we're being asked to join our consciousness with the earth more completely, to join our consciousness with the consciousness of the earth. But how can we join with something if we don't know that it's real? We have to know it's real. We have to know, or at least begin to know, that the earth has a consciousness, that the earth has a soul much vaster than our individual souls, but nevertheless a soul that has consciousness, life, intentionality, and the transfer of that life into physical being. The earth as we know it as solid is the physical expression of the consciousness of the earth. So we're being asked today to join our consciousness with the sacred consciousness of the earth, not just with the physical body of the earth, to help the earth be more healthy, which is certainly important. But this is way beyond the physical body. This is about the unity of life. And the movement that's taking place is happening for a lot of reasons. The movement towards joining more with the earth's consciousness, it's happening for the reason of necessity, that is, more people are afraid of what's happening to the planet and what's happening to the habitats of species and what's happening to the atmosphere. There are more people who are afraid about the irreversible patterning that's taking place of species and habitats changing. I'm not saying it is irreversible, but the fear is that it's irreversible. In fact, I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying that the earth's consciousness can heal what looks like it's irreversible, but only with great difficulty and only over a long period of time. But things are healable that seem to be irreversible. So going back to consciousness and divine mysteries, when our spiritual senses develop, we become capable of feeling more life in life, in each other, feeling more the soul, the deeper self of another embodied being, and also the life in things that we call things which are not things. The reason that the native peoples in this country and elsewhere are asking us to honor the sacred traditions and sacred sites of the world is because they have direct experience of those sacred sites as alive. This isn't theoretical. This is experiential. For us, it's theoretical if we don't have an experience. Similarly with the earth, if we don't have an experience of the consciousness of the earth touching our own, then it's a hypothesis, it's a theory. But if we have an experience of the consciousness of a place or an object, such as a rock or a tree or a plant or anything, then we no longer think of it as a discussion point. Then it just is what it is. It's a live being communicating. And so the mystery of energy becoming matter, matter becoming energy, energy becoming consciousness, consciousness becoming energy, is about life itself. How life comes into being, what it means to be alive, and our consciousness of that is small, small compared to what it can become, is becoming, small. Sometimes we have mysterious experiences with each other. These are the experiences of soul connection, where we feel we know somebody that we've never met, or we feel that we can see through the external persona to that person's history or what their soul purpose is. We have an intuition of knowledge that comes to us from someplace deep inside that has nothing to do with the mind. It's an intuition. It's an inner knowing that comes from our being, not from our mind. And so then we have magical experiences with other beings. It happens. to all of us from time to time. But we have to look for them also. We have to be open to it. We can't be relating to people from our mind and thinking, oh, I want to be open to divine reality, but, you know, I'm thinking about what this person looks like or what kind of background they have or whether they're like me in any particular kind of way that might be important. If we're evaluating with our mind what's going on with somebody else or with the natural world, then we close the door to what's possible. We close the door because we're looking at the prism of reality through this layer. We think the layer is the whole story, but it's only a small part. So then we miss the rest of the story. And that's very much true with things that we think are things, including animals that we think are things, many people. So everything has consciousness, and every consciousness has energy, and every energy can communicate with us. And that's part of the divine mystery of life. And of death. So, for example, we have various layers of understanding what happens to the soul after death. And those of us who have thought about this some have a general perspective that that which inhabits the physical body can, at the time the body is no longer useful for that purpose, for the soul's purpose, can determine to leave that body and become formless and wait in some other realm. Wait in that other realm is kind of vague to us, but we hold that there is another realm, most of us who have thought a great deal about this, and there's another realm, and then at some point that consciousness which has remained intact decides to have more experiences with physical reality and so returns into a physical body in order to have more experiences. This is a kind of general, all-purpose description of how our current traditions hold, at least some of them, not all, but hold the manifestation of physical life, the departure into another vibrational domain, and the return. There are, of course, traditions that hold part of that and not the return part, the part about physical life being singular and non-physical life then being the continuity of physical life into the beyond. And then those traditions that hold that have a whole picture of what that might be like. So there is mystery still involved in that, but it's not involved with the picture of cycles of physical incarnation and then departure and incarnation. So all of that, we need to respect all of those perspectives. All of it is involved with mystery because basically anything that here's where we are as a collective humanity, anything that we don't see and don't register with our physical senses gets deposited into the arena of not being sure it exists for most people. We're sure it exists. If we see it, we can touch it, and it can duplicate itself, and we know, therefore, that it existed before because it's happening again. This is a scientific methodology that we trust. So, we don't yet know what happens to the cells of our body when we die. Where do they go? Einstein talks about E equals mc squared. Matter converts into energy, energy converts into matter. Okay, where do the cells of our body go? Well, that general all-purpose description I was giving you is that we don't exactly know where the cells of our body go, but we sort of know that we become just consciousness without form. Well, what if the cells of our body actually went someplace, they were housed someplace, not in form, but what if the cells of our body could become energy and wait with the consciousness in order to return back to matter? that we actually didn't need to lose the physical body. Well, we lose the existing physical body, but that the core structure of what created that body, the core structure, could then be returning as a new physical body from the core structure. We're not talking about molecules now, we're talking about something else that involves the departure of the core structure of the physical body, waiting in the other dimensional level, and then returning to create a new body. This is the picture of a fluid universe in which everything can become everything else. And it's a picture of a universe in which consciousness is everything, and the creative power of consciousness is ever-present, ever-present. So we are being asked not only by our own souls and not only by the Earth's consciousness, but by the native peoples of the world now to pay attention to the Earth's being wounded, to the Earth's being hurt, to the Earth's being in pain. And there are those who are the protectors of the Earth who are specifically asking us to pay attention to the places that hold a higher vibration of sacredness, that are more energetically important to the well-being of the Earth. If you look at different spiritual traditions, you will see that different traditions have different names for places. And perhaps they're all true. There are lots of different theories about places and sacredness. But we don't need to look on the level of information. We need to look with our hearts. We need to look with our hearts at what we feel about holy places, what our experience is, inner experience of holy places. That's the best guide. And sometimes we don't even have to have gone someplace to know that it's holy. Sometimes we can hear the name of something or see a picture of something, and we can know that just intuitively. But there are places on the Earth that are in greater need of protection. And the issues that came up at Standing Rock this past year, 2016, brought into focus that mystery about sacred sites. It brought to mainstream consciousness the need to look at, what does it mean that people say this is a sacred site? What does it mean? What does it mean to each one of us? The Lakota definition, from my understanding, is that the people held as sacred that land for a number of different reasons, all coming together. The history of a culture was there, the burial of the ancestors was there, and most importantly, the worship of those two things was there. So what made it sacred was all three components. It was the history of a people related to that land. It was the burial of the ancestors, those who came before, in that land. And it was the way of treating with reverence both the history and the relationships to the land. And it was also the way of treating the creatures of the land also. All of that came together. The honoring of the ancestors in the burial sites, the history of the people, the worship of the place and the land, and the life forms that were part of it, which created, as they do within our own families, a connection. We, mostly in the West, experience connections with our biological families, but for Native peoples, they experience connection with the land as family and with the creatures as family. We haven't arrived at that yet, but we're getting there. So we were brought into this mystery of sacred sites because of what was happening at Standing Rock. And those of you who were involved emotionally with that probably had some strong feelings about it. And some of you may have prayed with those people who were there or who went there. But Standing Rock did a great service for the earth, brought to our collective consciousness the question about values and about mystery. What is important and why is it important? And where are we with that? Where are we with our physical eyes looking at life? And what is this about praying all the time? And why are these people doing it? Why are they praying all the time? Because they have a holy relationship with prayer and with what they're praying for, because they conceive of it as their sense of purpose and duty and responsibility to pray all the time for the land and for the redemption of human consciousness. On Easter, when the Christian tradition considers and honors the sacred event of Jesus' death and resurrection, and the rest of the world may or may not know anything about what that is, we need to hold it as a divine mystery in the light of what I'm saying, because what has now in our secularized consciousness become something that we call a myth or a convenient or comforting way of looking at things, or something that we want to believe but may have no truth to it. We have all these ways of looking at things that are mystery. Well, let's take another look at what I just said about energy and matter, and death and life and death being much, much more complex than how we hold it. Much, much more complex. And not make assumptions about what's possible because science tells us it's possible or impossible. Science is not the definition of reality. Science is the definer of reality. If we give it that power, then it's the definer of reality. But it's not. It's the definer of physical reality. It's not the definer of reality, only of physical reality. So we can, in our own consciousness, wherever we are today, honor the death and resurrection of one who brought great help, great gifts, great redemption, and a total transformation to the world that existed at that time through divine action, through action beyond the human level of will or intention or knowledge. Death and resurrection of the Christ is a divine mystery, and has to be treated as a divine mystery, which involves things that go way beyond physical perception, along the lines that I was just explaining. And so the mystery of salvation, what we call salvation in the Christian tradition, is also a divine mystery. And we honor that. We honor the mystery of salvation, universal salvation, that can be brought about through divine action. We honor that not for reasons of being Christian, but for reasons of understanding that God can act through the physical realm in ways that are directly influential and beneficial for all beings. For all beings. So this is how the streams come together of divine mystery. The divine mystery of universal salvation and redemption that is celebrated on Easter. And the divine mystery of the earth that we celebrate in our consciousness by recognizing that the earth is a being, and that we can be, if we choose to be, in communion with that being, and that the consciousness that orchestrates the beginning of life is present in all things now, waiting for our senses to open, so that we can appreciate the wonder and the mystery of life.